The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Welcome to What About Wealth? Making it, investing it, protecting it, leaving a legacy with your hosts, Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. In today's economy, preserving wealth has become more important than ever, especially when it comes to our future generations. Now, here is Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee.
Good morning, everyone. This is Rich Bloomfield.
Welcome, welcome. This is Rick Durfee. I am the lawyer.
And I am the CPA, and we work together with many, many dentists. And so today, Rick, we're going to be talking about what dentists need to know about asset protection. And obviously that's a topic right down your alley. And but working together, we've come up with some great things for helping dentists to protect their assets. So we're going to do a whole show on that today. We're excited about that.
You know, I want to say right off, one of the first things they need to know is that asset protection is a team sport. It's not something that just the lawyer or just the CPA can do to be done correctly and to be effective across the board. It requires the skill set and the perspective of both, from both the accounting and the legal side. Otherwise, there are gaps or issues that arise. So first thing you need to know with that asset protection in mind is that you're going to get the best results if you bring your advisors together and have them collaborate with each other. It's not a one-off, oh, I can just go to this one or that one and get what I need. It's asset protection is a team sport.
Right. And, you know, the thing that we've seen, Rick, over the years is that when you don't bring the whole team together, then, you know, it turns into a competition sometimes of some sort where the professionals are trying to one-up each other and shoot down each other's ideas. You see that a lot, and I don't know if that's because people are insecure or what, but by far the best plans come from, seasoned, mature professionals who work together with the client's best interest in mind, check their egos at the door, and come up with the best plan for the client. So that's what we've tried to do for years, and we feel like we've been very successful at that. So anyway.
You know, I want to comment on that. To get good advice, your professionals need to be at liberty to brainstorm. And when you brainstorm, you put all the ideas on the table, even some of the ones that may sound stupid at first. But after maybe a few tweaks and a little mature consideration, turn out to be really good ideas. And if you're not comfortable enough with yourself and your judgment and your the risk of expressing an idea, you don't get the good ideas. The good ideas get left in the closet because we're afraid to bring them out. So that's just part of the culture that needs to exist.
All right. So today, as I mentioned, we're going to talk about asset protection, and I think the term is self-explanatory, but Rick, from a legal standpoint, explain that to us. What are we doing with asset protection?
Well, we want to keep our stuff and keep the bad guys away, but also, too often asset protection is thought of only in terms of eliminating or avoiding the problems that can come from litigation. But litigation is only one of the many events that can put assets at risk. Taxation is another one. Succession is another one. When I'm done with my practice and I'm getting out, how you get out or what you get out of your practice, that's a huge thing. Things that go on in your personal life, you know, with a dentist, the health of the dentist, the ability to stand at the chair and move your arms up and down and do things with your fingers, are significant, and losing that, causes you to lose assets. So asset protection is multidisciplinary. It's looking at the big picture. It's structuring everything, from the practice to the employees to the how your taxes are set up, how you're growing your practice, how you're managing your customer base, how you're managing its operations, and what you do and what you choose not to do in your practice, and where you stuff the money when you make it, and what you buy and what you don't buy. So it's really it has to be a holistic process where we look at the whole picture.
Okay, and so I know that as we were preparing for the show, we came up with a list of reasons why dentists should care about asset protection. And I think you covered some of them in defining it. But I think it's good to go through, because you know one or more of these will probably strike a chord with our dentists out there who are listening to this. So, you know, you mentioned that dentists, obviously you're a medical professional, and anything that you're doing where you're working on other people's bodies, whether it's their mouth or anywhere else, that's risky. And so you do risky things as a dentist, and that's why asset protection should be important to you. And typically, if you're running your practice right, and you know, we help dentists a lot with this, Rick, where and it's as strange as it sounds, your CPA can actually help increase your bottom line in your practice, simply by helping you with visibility on what's going on in the practice by the numbers. So, and you know, we're pretty good at that, and we have some other people that we work with that really help. So dentists typically have more money than the average person, and people know that, and so they'll want to take that away from you. So that's another reason.
And on that score, there are lawyers out there who make a living by doing nothing but suing dentists. We were talking before the show. There was actually a radio advertisement I heard here in the Phoenix market where the advertisement comes on, and there's this more snazzy music, and a voice says, you know, did you go to the dentist and your teeth still hurt? And they went down a list of all these things, the bad things that can happen in the dentist chair, and said, call, I don't remember who the lawyer, and I wouldn't advertise him if I could remember, but call so-and-so, I sue dentists for a living.com lawyer or whatever it is. And so there are dentists, or there are lawyers out there whose business plan is find dentists who have screwed up somehow and sue them and take some of their money, and that's how you're going to make your living. So the pirates are out there to raid your ship.
Right. Well, that's unfortunate, but you know, that's your profession. I don't know what
it is. It is my profession. The other thing, though, you kind of touch on this. Dentists have patients sitting in chairs. They are in vulnerable positions, and they can make claims. And I actually had a case where a patient made a claim against one of my clients that they were inappropriately touched. And the dentist, to his credit, had proof. There was a video feed that showed that nothing happened here. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
So and a then, video feed.
Video That's feed, a, yeah.
Okay.
So then dentists, even if they are totally well-behaved and would never do anything wrong, they have employees, and the employees can misbehave and do things that produce liability for the dentist.
Right. You mentioned this a moment ago, but expanding on it a little bit, You know, as you build a dental practice, you're building something that has great value. And I see this so many times, Rick, where, in fact, I'm working with a couple of dentists right now who are getting to the end of their time that they want to practice, but they haven't put in place a succession plan, and they have these practices where, you know, they're still, it's not gangbusters to be sure, but they're still pulling down, you know, $300,000 to $500,000 a year. And they're seriously considering just closing the door and walking away. That's nuts. Because yeah, with a proper succession plan, and that's what we're working with them on, you know, we're turning that closing the doors and walking away into, you know, several hundred thousand dollars. So you know, you need to protect that that practice by making sure that you've got a good succession plan in place so that you don't get caught in a position where, hey, I'm just going to have to walk away from this.
Yeah, and we've seen that. In fact, I just had a client who called me to ask. He was looking at a dental practice to purchase and called me to ask what a reasonable price was. We talked about how you price a dental practice. And he ended up purchasing the practice for about 15% of what the seller should have got, because the seller didn't care. He had come to view his practice as a nuisance, as a burden instead of as an asset. So just that mindset. But that's a huge part of protecting your assets. If you don't know what an asset is and what an asset is not, you won't know what to protect. And then, right, of course, as part of the practice, there's all the equipment. There's all the accounts receivable. All of those are special things that require special treatment in the practice.
Right. And then one more that I wanted to mention is that, you know, one of the biggest ones that we have to protect your assets from are taxes. And, you know, we can only do so much on the income tax side, but protecting them from estate taxes, and many, many dentists accumulate enough assets over their life, Rick, that they end up with a significant estate, and including the value of the practice. So putting some things in place to protect from the tax man is also an asset protection move. So
yeah, that both when they die with their estate, the estate tax, but also when they sell with the capital gains tax. A lot of people don't know that capital gains taxes are optional, and you can pay them or not, and there are some very highly effective strategies to not pay a capital gains tax upon the sale of a highly appreciated asset like a dental practice.
Okay.
So let's dive into some of the structures, some of the things, and it may be no surprise to our listeners that if you're going to do asset protection of any kind, you're going to have a variety of structures. And there's going to be, frankly, more than one, and that's because there's different pieces that we're protecting and they have different functions. So we have a piece for the practice itself. We have a piece for the accumulation of wealth. We have a place for equipment or for dangerous toys. Dentists like to accumulate dangerous toys. I don't know why. But then maybe the commercial buildings, and each of these structures or each of these parts of the plan will have its own entity and will be owned differently. And I guess the first question that I want to throw out there is, do dentists need a trust? And what the heck is a trust? And do they need one? And
okay. Well, I can answer part of that, and then you can probably jump in with filler. But dentists need a trust, and most dentists need more than one trust. So, you know, for sure, they need a revocable trust. Which is the kind that, you know, if you've ever talked to anyone, any person out there about planning, you know, setting up a revocable trust is something really that everyone should do, and they should, and they really should do that for a couple of important reasons. One is that it protects you from having to be or your heirs from having to probate your estate at some point, which is always a good thing because it saves a lot of legal bills and it keeps all of your business private rather than public. And then also, even with, you know, some of the portability provisions that have been introduced recently, a trust is still the best way to protect your lifetime exclusion, which is the ability that each of us has to pass on a certain amount to our heirs without estate tax. And if you're married and you don't have a trust, there's a real risk that you run of one or the other of you losing that lifetime exclusion, which is worth a lot of money. So anyway, that's an important reason for setting up a trust. There are many others, but those are two important ones. And then Rick,
I want to hit on some more, because a trust, you know, we've talked about a succession plan, but a trust is actually one of the first key elements of a succession plan. It manages what's going to happen in the event of a disability, you know, long before all these death taxes and other issues arise. We often face disability. It's going to be the entity that manages what goes on when you sell or when you retire. That trust is going to be what ultimately passes the wealth that you've spent your lifetime accumulating to your children or grandchildren, however you want to do that. Then the other thing is, and that's just the revocable trust. You mentioned that they need two trusts. The second trust that they are going to need if we're going to do serious asset protection is an asset protection trust. And there's lots of ways of describing that, but this will be a trust that's outside of the taxable estate, that's unavailable to the creditors. Hopefully, if they've done a good job, it's going to be grantor defective. It's going to have dynasty provisions. It's going to have perpetuity provisions. And that trust will be a key factor in how the estate is and how the practice and how all the assets are structured to protect them. And without that asset protection trust, you're flapping in the wind. You're not protected. You're exposed across the board. And it's frankly these two trusts that put together properly with all the other entities that are going to own everything. A dentist in structuring their affairs should never own anything personally, with a few exceptions. I know in some states it's required by law that the dentist personally own the charts, the patient records, and that's part of the professional liability. But beyond what is compelled by law that you own personally, everything else should be owned either by a trust or by an entity, which is in turn owned by a trust. So, Rich, let's turn now to how should the dental practice be owned? I know that we have gone to LLCs, and we prefer those for a variety of reasons, and that's a whole hour show. We could talk about that alone. But with an LLC, we typically like to have that – we elect to have that taxed in a particular way. Talk about how we prefer the LLC for the dental practice to be taxed and why.
Okay, and we've just got a minute or so here before we need to take a break. But the LLC is very flexible in that you can elect to be taxed four different ways with that. And our preference with the LLC typically is to have it taxed as an S corp, simply because there's so much history with S corps, so much litigation that has gone on there, and we know pretty much exactly what can be done. And it helps us with things like taking a reasonable salary and being able to distribute the rest and not have it subject to self-employment taxes, which, you know, just went up under Obamacare anyway. And so it's a big chunk that can be saved if we make the S election. And as I said, it brings us into probably safer ground from a litigation standpoint because we know what's supposed to happen there. So we have a lot more to talk about on this asset protection for dentists, and we'll do that as soon as we come back from this short break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Live well and leave a legacy. Durfee Law Group offers dynasty estate planning and asset protection services so you can do just that. We focus on helping our clients gain maximum protection and privacy by providing the right tools and innovative strategies to sustain both immediate and long-term success. Call us today to set up a complimentary consultation. Call 480-324-8000. That's 480-324-8000. Or visit our website at www.durfeelawgroup.com. That's D-U-R-F-E-E lawgroup.com. We'll help you turn the gift of wealth into a blessing for your heirs rather than a curse.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Rich Bloomfield, and I'm the CPA.
And this is Rick Durfee. I'm the lawyer.
And this is What About Wealth? And today we are talking about the what dentists need to know about asset protection. And as we've already established, and there are lots and lots of reasons, Rick, that dentists need to be concerned about this. We see it all the time, good and bad, as to why these topics are important. So right before we went to our break, we ended up talking about the dental practice and the structure of that entity and elections that we can make. Talk to us, Rick, about what if you have a partner that you're in practice with?
That's a big deal. So your partner owns a piece of your practice, some percentage. A couple of issues to be aware of. What your partner does with their own estate affects you. So it matters to you whether your partner has done their own asset protection and their own estate planning, whether they have a trust or more than one trust or other things, because if your partner's life is messed up, your life is messed up. So that's the first principle. The second thing is, with a partnership, you got to have an exit plan, and specifically there should be built-in buy-sell arrangements so that in the event of the D's, this is we use iteration here, death, disability, disengagement, deadbeat. So if we have
disagreement,
yeah, disability, all those things, so the D's. So if your partner dies, if they become disabled, if you just disagree with them, or if they turn out to be a deadbeat or a decoy, you want to be able to get out, and you want to know what your plan is to get out and what it's going to cost, and you want to know that when you go in. So we structure that. That's a huge thing that protects your assets so that you're not vulnerable to the risks of your partner. I actually saw – this blows my mind that smart people would do this. Dentists who run their joint practices as a general partnership, which is the default. You just hold up a shingle and they're putting everything on a Schedule C. If you do that, then you have personal liability for all the actions of your partner. So your partner does something stupid with a credit card. Your partner does something stupid with a patient. You can be liable for it because you fail to structure your practice in a way that insulates you from your partner's bad judgment. So So just that structure becomes key, and then having the exit plan, the buy sell to get out of the structure, and then of course making sure your partner has done their own planning.
Right, and I think you'd agree with me, Rick. It's shocking how few people we see who actually have a buy sell agreement in place, and if it is in place, that it's adequate. So it just seems that that's something that is too difficult or painful or something to sit down and negotiate. What people realize, if they've ever been through a separation with a partner, is that it's a heck of a lot easier to do it on the front end than to fight over it later when you don't have one in place. So that's a really, really important piece to put in place. And it really does protect your assets when you start splitting things up.
You know what this is like? It's like people that are really smart in one area of their life can be really dumb in the other. And I have a great relationship with my own dentist who happens to be a client of my firm. And when I sit in the chair and my dentist says, you know, hey, you got this thing going on in your mouth. What do you want to do? My response is, look, you're the guy that's trained in this. You know, what would you do if this was your mouth? Okay, do that. I want his professional judgment and advice on what's appropriate. And in the same way, asset protection is an area where the dentist could be the smartest, most brilliant, genius dentist in the world, but he doesn't know the tax and the legal and the accounting and the liability side of this, which is why you bring in that team of advisors to help you be smart in areas where you're not trained.
Right, and that's the really good business people that we deal with, that, you know, many who own multiple practices, they figure that out early on. And that's why they're able to kind of rise above some of the day-to-day concerns and actually, you know, get outside their practice, run it, and even acquire more. So having the team on board really benefits you in many ways, in addition to making sure that everything you have is protected.
Let's talk about protecting the house now. You know, one of the things I see dentists do, they like to live in nice houses. And they tend to pay them off. They tend to be very good at whacking down that mortgage. And so before long, they've got a big chunk of equity in their house. And when we do a balance sheet with dentists and say, okay, what are we trying to protect and what are we trying to protect it from? An area of significant exposure is, hey, the castle is vulnerable to the teeming hordes that might come. If there's litigation, they're going to get the house. And so a couple of things. One is there are in some places, some locations, we can't do this everywhere, but there are some jurisdictions where a house can be bomb-proofed by structuring it inside of a special kind of LLC. We call it a residential LLC that's owned by these trusts. And the house is owned by that LLC, and then we have a special agreement that provides that it's going to be treated as a personal residence. It's not a commercial or a rental property. It's not going to be depreciated. And then we encumber that residence with friendly debt. We're going to put a mortgage on that house in favor of one of the entities over in the structure, and that can either be the asset protection trust or it can be one of the other entities that we're going to talk about. But we have that friendly debt on the residents so that there is a liability of record in priority ahead of all the bad guys. So if there is some kind of lien that ever attaches to the house, it is in priority behind this friendly debt, which gives us the power to protect and recover the equity of the house.
Okay, that's very important. And I know, Rick, in some situations, you mentioned in some jurisdictions, that's not available to set up the LLC, but what is available in all jurisdictions, I believe, is the ability for one of your friendly entities to put a HELOC, a mortgage, something on the house, because we do have a lot of clients that have a lot of equity in their house. and that needs to be protected. So even without the residential LLC, you can still take a big step towards protecting the equity.
Can indeed. Now, we have two more entities we want to introduce, the management company and the family bank. And let's talk about the management company first. Typically, this is an entity that we're going to give control to this entity. And when we're doing asset protection, we create these different buckets. We put control in one bucket and nothing else. And we're going to put risky things in a separate bucket so that if they explode, that liability is contained within the bucket. And then we're going to put big equity items over in their own bucket so that if something explodes in another bucket over there, it doesn't come over and hurt our equity here. So the management company is one, and typically dentists, if they're successful, if they do what they say they're going to do, and if they build the kind of practice they want and ought to have, they're going to accumulate stuff. And we need to have a way for them to control that stuff, even if they don't necessarily own it all. And the management company is that way. And typically we have it, again, an LLC. We have it owned with what we call the hair trigger, so that the equity for that is actually outside of the taxable estate, unavailable to creditors, but the dentist and his or her and the dentist's spouse, if they're married, have control over that. And we often elect to have that taxed as a corporation. Talk to us again, Rich. Why would we want that taxed as a corporation?
Okay, so again, to clarify, we set up an LLC. That's the legal thing that you file with the state that you live in. But for tax purposes, we elect to have it taxed, as Rick mentioned, often as a C corp. People say, "Why don't you do that?" It's there's double taxation, all the issues that people kind of know about C corps. However, there are some planning things that we like to use that can only work if it's a C corp. With a C corp, because this is a management entity, that's where the control is, and that's where if there's a problem, you're going to be taking the arrows in this entity. So a C corp does provide some protection that you might not get with other entities. So anyway, those are a couple of reasons why we want to elect to be taxed as a C corp. It gives us that entity which is unique and which there are specific things that can only be done using a C corp, and that gives us an opportunity to do that in the structure.
Awesome. Like pension plans or like deducting medical expenses. There's all kinds of things that are unique to that corporate structure.
Right. And a Section 79 plan is another one.
Okay. Now, we also have the family bank. That's an entity we call the family bank. This can be either an LLC or sometimes it will be a limited partnership or an LLP, depending on the location and depending on other factors such as what we're trying to protect. But the family bank is an entity where we're going to put the good stuff that we like to have, the cash, the investments, the non-qualified investments. And typically we want this so it's bulletproof so that it's not available to the general liabilities of the dentist, but the dentist still has control over it and access to it. So this family bank will typically be, again, a partnership type structure, an LLC or an LP or an LLP, and the partners are going to be these two trusts that we've talked about. The revocable trust, the family trust, will be a partner. The irrevocable asset protection dynasty trust will be a partner. And it's that split of ownership between those two trusts and the LLC or LP structure that makes this entity bulletproof from the personal or professional liabilities of the dentist, so that if there is some risk event that happens, the unpleasant circumstance arises out of the professional practice, and there's ensuing litigation, then how do we protect all the good stuff? Well, it's tucked away in the family bank. But then the family bank is, of course, managed by the management company LLC that we talked about, and it will pay management fees over there, and those management fees will be used for tax-deductible business expenses, the management costs and operation, and the insurance and the medical expenses and all those other plans that we mentioned. But then it can also be – this family bank is also a vital entity in protecting the assets. It's the entity, for example, that will own the loan. It will own the HELOC or the line of credit on the personal residence. The family bank can also take liens on the equipment that's owned by the dental practice or on the accounts receivable, so we can have UCC filings with liens on that equipment. So, again, the family bank is in priority as a secured creditor to recover that equipment in case of a catastrophic event. And it's where the dentist accumulates all the good stuff, the cash and the investments. So as you make extra money, have extra money, you deposit the money in the family bank. When you need money for something personal, you want to buy a new car, or you want to buy a new dangerous toy, you want to go spend some of that hard-earned money on a big vacation, you take it out of the family bank and personally, and then you spend it personally. So you put the extra in the family bank, you take the money out of the family bank because you're going to spend it. You laugh,
okay,
Rich.
So Rick, I have a question about that. So I've seen some dental practices where the equipment – so, you know, a lot of the equipment that dentists own is very, very expensive, and especially the specialists sometimes have really expensive piece of equipment. I've seen that owned in a separate entity. Now, why would you do that rather than just having it owned in the practice and then protected by putting liens on it or whatever?
Yeah, I love that question. And the ability to do this, there's some local sales tax issues that play into whether or not this is a good idea. But if the equipment is owned in a separate entity and the dental practice merely rents the equipment from that separate entity, let's go through a couple of scenarios here. The first one is the tax consequences. Now that income that's flowing through that equipment entity is rental income. It's not earned income, so it's K-1 income instead of W-2 income, so you don't pay all that self-employment tax. So there's, first of all, that tax benefit that can come, and a question we have to address is, do we then inadvertently trigger a sales tax? And that's a local issue that we'd have to bring up. But then in the worst-case scenario, the dentist has it's a rainy day, and a string of patients are coming in the front door, and the first one falls down, and they all knock each other down, and they all break their hips, and they all so they're all suing you. This is a general liability. It's not even resulting from the fact that you're a dentist, but you shouldn't have had that slippery tile. You should have put up your warning cones on the entryway of your building. So they sue you, and they get big fat judgments, and they come to collect. Well, your practice doesn't own the equipment. The equipment is owned by the rental company, and the rental company says, we're not going to let you have it anymore. They come and take it back. And then you can go open up a new practice entity and re-rent the same equipment, maybe even in the same location, and scrape off that liability so that the bad guys are not able to take the equipment. Plus, I've seen this in fact, I have a client situation where the client sold his practice, but he had a lab, and he kept the lab, and his children now actually run the lab, and they make dentures and other things like that in this lab. I don't fully understand it, but he kept that piece when he sold the practice, and he's actually passed that piece down to his children and grandchildren, and that's a revenue maker. So here we have three purposes. You get an income tax benefit, you get an asset protection benefit, you get a succession benefit, and we protected that equipment, that specialized equipment.
Okay.
Hooah.
We like that one.
Yeah, we better take another break. We've talked so long. We're going to have to pick up some of this. We'll talk more about the asset protection trust and some of the specialty entities when we come back from break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Live well and leave a legacy. Durfee Law Group offers dynasty estate planning and asset protection services so you can do just that. We focus on helping our clients gain maximum protection and privacy by providing the right tools and innovative strategies to sustain both immediate and long-term success. Call us today to set up a complimentary consultation. Call 480-324-8000. That's 480-324-8000. Or visit our website at www.durfeelawgroup.com. That's D-U-R-F-E-E lawgroup.com. We'll help you turn the gift of wealth into a blessing for your heirs rather than a curse.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Welcome back. This is Rick Durfee. I'm the lawyer.
And Rich Bloomfield, and I'm the CPA.
You know, before break, we were talking about having the equipment in a separate LLC. I want to mention actually one more thing, one more reason why that's really a good idea. I had a client who had a lab or had this equipment, and as he was ramping up, he was actually gearing his practice to sell it. One of the things he did with this lab is he went out to other dentists and started contracting with them to provide the services, and actually gathered up a significant group of customers for this specialized equipment that he had spent a lot of money on. And so I think there's opportunities for horizontal expansion, additional revenue sources for a practice conglomerate, I guess, that's pretty significant.
I like that idea. It's it provides so many opportunities from a tax standpoint, a succession standpoint, because you don't have to be a dentist to, you know, to do that kind of thing. And as you mentioned, he was able to pass that piece on to the family instead of having to go outside to find someone to succeed him and buy in to the practice. So anyway, Rick, we've talked about a lot of the pieces, but we've still got some important ones to talk about. So let's jump in and talk about maybe some specialized LLCs for certain things, and then we'll talk about the asset protection trust that we mentioned at the beginning.
Sure. Well, you know, one of the things that successful practices, successful dentists do over time is they buy stuff. A lot of times they'll say, well, I want to buy the building where I have my practice, so instead of paying rent, I can build some equity. And then we mentioned earlier, dentists are tend to buy dangerous toys. They'll go buy boats or RVs or quads or things that can kill, hurt, maim, and destroy property and people. And
spoken like a true attorney.
Yeah, well, they do. Actually, having owned quite a few of those dangerous toys and having been on them when the dangerous thing happens, and I was the one that the danger was happening to, I have a personal sense of how dangerous they can be. And then as part of their wealth accumulation strategy, often they're gonna acquire rental properties or you know, commercial properties, things like that. So all of those things need to be wrapped in their own separate LLC. And in our overall structure here, well, how do we structure that? We can have the LLC, and a lot of people think, well, if I have an LLC, that's it, and that's not it. How the LLC is owned and controlled is just as important, if not more important, than the fact that you have an LLC. You can have an LLC, and it will be completely worthless if it's not owned and controlled properly. So how is it owned? These specialty LLCs that own the office building or own the dangerous toys will be owned fractionally with multiple owners. One of the owners will probably be the family bank, but the other owners may be that asset protection dynasty trust, maybe the family dynasty trust, and in all events, they will be controlled by the management company. And these specialty LLCs, I compare them to a good fence. A good fence in your yard will keep your dog in and your neighbor's dog out. And by that we mean, when an asset protection context, we want this LLC to contain risk. So if we have a risky item like a dangerous toy, we wrap that in an appropriately structured LLC so that if the dangerous event occurs, you have a teenager driving a quad, they take the corner a little too fast, they roll it, they break body parts, and if they're lucky, they live. But now you have liability associated with that. You want that liability contained. And of course, you're going to be honorable and polite, and you're going to help that teenager get patched up and put back together, but you're not going to have the big, huge, catastrophic lawsuit come personally because you didn't own it personally. So that's containing. That's keeping your dog in. Keeping the neighbor's dog out means that if you have something valuable, like your commercial building where you're piling up equity because instead of paying rent, you're paying a mortgage, and your mortgage, you pay down the loan, so you build equity that way. Plus, in theory, it used to be that you could buy a property and over time it would go up in value. Some people can remember when that happened often, and we may see someday when it comes back and happens again. But if your commercial building is growing in equity, you want to protect that equity from the bad guys. So to keep the bad guys out, that LLC that is a multi-member LLC with multiple members and with a that's manager managed by a third party, which in this case is the management company, keeps the neighbor's dog out, so that liability, that risk, cannot get into the LLC.
Right, and you know, Rick, you mentioned those two important things, and as you mentioned earlier, we could spend a whole show talking about how that works and why it works and why it's a bad idea to have single member LLCs or LLCs that are member managed, but that's another topic. But it's a very important point that people should pay attention to, because people think it's so easy to go out and set up an LLC and why involve someone that does this all the time? Well, that's one of the reasons why, because there are lots of landmines, or you just think you're protected and you're not. So important point.
I recently had somebody challenge me on that. Why do you charge so much for an LLC? Because I do. I charge a lot. I charge a lot. And I say, because mine work. You go for it. You go set up that cheap one you can get online for not very much. You go ahead and set up that do-it-yourself one. And then let's see. We'll compare yours, the way you set it up with the do-it-yourself, and the way I set it up with mine that's fully documented, that has all the attributes that are necessary to protect it from creditors. And which one would you rather be driving in the car accident? Which one would you rather own in the catastrophic meltdown litigation situation?
Right. So, and it's not that we're trying to be, jumping up and down and creating a sense of urgency by saying those things. We just see it all the time, and we know what happens when it's set up right and when it's set up wrong. And so it's just we're just educating that it's very important to set it up correctly, and we know how to do that. So let's move on the last few minutes we have here and talk about the asset protection trust, Rick. And that's probably one that you ought to take on and teach us about in the next 4 minutes.
Right. You know, a lot of people, it used to be that they would think, oh, if I'm going to have asset protection, I've got to go offshore. And you do not need to go offshore. And in fact, going offshore has become a liability as much as anything. The reporting requirements and the scrutiny you get from tax authorities has become onerous, become burdensome. So this is a domestic, so it means local, right here in the where you live, irrevocable dynasty trust. It's as a trust, there's three parties, the grantor, the trustee, and the beneficiary. The dentist and the dentist's spouse will be the grantors. So they're going to set up this trust and they're going to create it. Sometimes, by the way, we can have third party grantors. So if we can have parents or in-laws or somebody create that trust for us, that creates some interesting planning opportunities. But then the trustee will typically be a trusted person, often a child if the children are old enough, or a brother, sister, aunt, uncle, somebody. And then the beneficiaries are typically the grandchildren and the children. And that trust is outside of the taxable estate of the dentist, which means whatever that trust owns, it's not taxed when you die. It also is unavailable to the creditors of the dentist. So you get sued personally, and stuff in that trust does not get taken away. And there's a few obvious things we put in there, by the way. This trust is going to own life insurance. And it has some special features when you do it right. We want to build in something called grantor defective provisions so that it's trust. As a trust, it's not taxed directly, but it's taxed to the dentist. And believe me, at the end of the day, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. And then some of the obvious things that we cause to be owned by this asset protection trust are things like life insurance, because if you personally own life insurance, the death benefit gets taxed when you die, or may get taxed when you die. But then we cause this asset protection dynasty trust to own a fractional share of all these business entities. So it owns a piece of the management company that controls. It owns a piece of the family bank that has the equity. It owns a piece of the residential LLC that protects the house. It owns a piece of the rental property LLCs that have your valuable rentals in them. It owns a piece of your dangerous toy LLCs that has the stuff that explodes and hurts people in it. It owns a piece of your commercial building. It owns a piece of all these entities so that we can accumulate wealth outside of your taxable estate so that when you die, your kids get it instead of the tax man. You know, most people don't know what's the number one risk event to your assets. What's the most likely thing to deplete your assets? And the answer is taxes. Here, number two, by the way, what's the second most likely thing to deplete your assets? And the answer is uncomfortable for some people, but the answer is one of those D's, divorce. So you want to protect your assets, strengthen your marriage. you get divorced, you might as well just take everything and throw it all away because you're going to lose it. Save your marriage, save your assets. The third most likely thing, by the way, is car accidents. And having an employee in a car driving something to the lab has resulted in liability for dentists that they didn't even think, well, gee, that didn't even have anything to do with my dental practice. That's right. Driving is another D that gets you in trouble. So having all those, your business and practice and estate and asset entities fractionally owned by this dynasty trust makes it so that the bad guys can't get it, and you can accumulate wealth outside of your taxable estate, and you have a succession plan so that when you retire or check out or get taken out by a big truck, your family keeps the money instead of giving it to the bad guys.
And by bad guys, included in that are the government. So
ouch, ouch, ouch. Isn't the government the source of all good, the solution to all human problems?
Well, according to the anointed one, yes, but Obama is probably not right.
Wow. So let's give a summary here of our things that dentists need to know about asset protection. They need to know that it's a team sport. You don't do it alone. You got to have the input of your financial advisors, your accounting advisors, your legal advisors. You got to know that you're going to have not one trust. You're going to have more than one trust. You got to know how to structure your dental practice to protect you. And the need for that structure goes up when you have partners. You got to have a buy sell planning in there. You got to know how to own your house so that the bad guys can't storm the castle and take it away from you. And now they own the nice house and you don't. You got to know how to have control. Remember, it's what you control. It's not what you own. You've got to have a family bank, a place to accumulate stuff where it's safe, and then know how to use that family bank to structure debt in favor of you so that you have friendly debt on your house, friendly debt on your equipment, friendly debt on your accounts receivable. Then you may want to structure your equipment, all that expensive equipment, separate from the practice itself. And of course, then your rental properties, your dangerous toys, your commercial building, all wrapped in separate LLCs. And that's kind of the overall picture. Rich, what have we left out?
Well, there's too much to include all in, a 1 hour thing, but I think we've covered the important points. Hopefully this will be something that, that is intriguing to those in the dental practice. Give us a call at 480-324-8000 or email us at info@whataboutwealth.com, and we'd love to talk to you more about this.
Thank you for listening to What About Wealth with hosts Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. Please join us again for another edition next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a profitable week.